From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the second day of September 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. And a bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to discuss the agricultural weather forecasts.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn finished a quarter higher at 349 and three quarters today. December at three quarters higher, 358 and three quarters settlement price there. March up 1.5 at 369 and a quarter. And July corn of next year at 379 and a half, up a penny for the day. Soybeans September contracts 7.5 cents higher as it gained at the end of the day. Finished at 962 and a half. November up 7.25 at 962. And January beans up 7.25 at 968 and a quarter. The May contract 8.25 higher at 971 and a quarter. Bean oil futures finished 55 cents higher. The bean meal down 50 cents on the afternoon. July soft red winter wheat at 569 and a half, down 3 for the day. And live cattle futures were down a dollar. Feeders were down a buck 42 and a half for the afternoon. And lean hogs in the October finished at 56.40, up a dollar 37 and a half. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Hello, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon.
Let's start with the support and resistance levels today.
December corn support 341, resistance 371. The crossover points at 295, and we have a gap below us between 345 and 348. On March corn, 350 is support, 373 is resistance. The crossover point is at 420, but there is a gap below us also in March, 357 to 360. In November beans, 932 for support, 968 resistance, crossover points at $9. January, 948 is support, 994 resistance, and basically we are trading right up against the downtrend line, crossover point, 882. Dow Jones, wow. Unbelievable. Still the same support, 26,888, resistance 29,568, and we are currently trading above the downtrend line, so we have to see if we can actually close above that. U.S. dollar index, 92,06 support, 94,65 is resistance, and this is our 6 month with a lower high and a lower low so far. So a lot of really interesting things going on.
What's been happening with the managed money?
They continue to move to the longer side. Soft red wheat, 31,000 long compared to 2,000 short last week. Corn short, 48,000 compared to 65 last week. Beans long, 152 compared to 115 last week. Meal, 13 long compared to 7 short last week. And oil, 70 long compared to 61 last week.
So now on the managed money, I've got a question because it's come up a couple of times in other conversations I've had this week. And it's a little bit about the psychology of the marketplace and the transition away from pit trade and what that has meant to all those people that have been involved for a very long time. Because it seems to me that some of the psychology of the marketplace has disappeared and it's left a blind spot, relatively speaking, especially as it references both black box and managed money trading, because they do things a lot differently than the commercial side. And I'm wondering what impact that has had in the market from your opinion, if that's really the case, or I'm just seeing something that's not there.
Oh, no, it's really the case. The transition away from having a floor has just been it's been devastating. Maybe that's too strong a word, but I'll give you an example. I have always been very active in covering deferred crops, like 21, you know, going out to December 21, going out to November of 21. You can't even do that. You can't get enough action out there to do anything. So you have to cover in closer months. It's an entirely different atmosphere. It's an atmosphere of it has a lack of humanity is what it has. It's a machine atmosphere. When you had the floor, you had people who could go to someone else and say, listen, you know, I've done a lot for you over the years. I need you to fill this order for me. Well, you don't have that anymore. You just have lost that entire part of the marketplace. And it's sad. it's very, very sad because it makes it really hard to be able to do, you know, the best job possible. You just, you know, as an example, you may come up with a strategy that is an excellent strategy from a risk management standpoint, and one leg of the strategy you can't get done because there aren't enough people that are willing to, you know, willing to participate. And you can't tell that when you're trying to, you know, when you're coming up. You can look at basically how much open interest there is, all of the types of things that would indicate whether people are involved. But if they're involved that particular day is another question. And so it's just changed completely. It's not good.
Yeah, I know from my perspective, it used to be if I left the marketplace and went on vacation, wasn't paying attention for a week or two, it would take maybe 3 to 4 weeks to get back in the rhythm of the marketplace. But it seems like today that rhythm just doesn't happen like it used to. you're kind of flying blind, I guess. It's just a different world. And I've had a couple of discussions during the week about it this week and seen some other things. And I know you and I have talked about it before, so I thought it would be interesting and worthwhile to mention. We probably ought to talk about other things, though, too. Things that are really happening, ethanol and exports to Brazil. They have tariffs on, tariffs off. What's happening?
Oh, geez. Yeah, if that isn't the truth. On the 31st, they actually allowed the tariff quota to expire. And that could result in U.S. producers paying a 20% tariff, you know, if they don't take new action. But, you know, that still doesn't stop them from making a decision over the next few days, you know, to go back to the way it was. Right now, the U.S. ethanol producer is allowed 750 million liters per year into Brazil with no tariff on it. But there are signs that the government, that they could reinstate the quota if the U.S. eases the sugar tariff that affects Brazil. Okay, so this is a negotiation is what it is. And so we'll see once what happens. But it was a shock. I don't believe anybody really expected that they were going to do that. And so Brazil's been doing a lot of very interesting things. I'll cover some when we get down to them later. But it just never seems to stop, does it?
No.
No matter how you look at it, it's one thing after another.
A couple of other things before we come back to South America. Trend line yields here in the United States, did you update them this week?
I most certainly did. And actually, on the corn side of things, nothing changed. We still were at 24.9% below trend line, 24.3% at trend line, 41.9% above trend line. But when it comes to the beans, that's a different situation. Same on the below trend line, 13.5% of the acres. We moved to 16.6% of the acres at trend line, and that moved up to 65% of the acres above trend line. Last week, we only had 61.5% of the acres above trend line. So I was kind of surprised, and Illinois, Indiana, all above trend line. At this juncture, at least, you know. So the only ones that were well below trend line, of course, were Mississippi, and then North Dakota and Ohio and Tennessee, of course, are right in at the trend line levels. But it's going to be interesting to see how it all works out. I mean, you know, this is basically crop ratings, and there's always that if in there as to whether or not, I guess, how accurate they are. But it's the best that we have for the moment. Let's put it that way.
We'll get a better sense on the 11th,
yep.
Friday, not this one, but the following one, when USDA will actually have objective yields to deal with. There have been, however, a lot of folks that have been out and about in the fields. Mm-hmm. I know StoneX came out with their numbers. There have been some other numbers throughout the week. Anything of interest that you saw that's worth talking about?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at the bigger picture, it just goes to back up how variable everything is. You know, you see some of the pictures of the wind damage in Iowa. It's horrible. There's no question about that. It all comes down to what's going to happen. I mean, farmers are going to try and harvest if they can, and they're not going to lose 100% of their yield. And then there's other places, you know, which a lot of times we don't pay as much attention to that seem to be way ahead on compared to other years. So will it all balance itself out? I guess all the StoneX tells you, or any of them tell you basically, is that, you know, we're in the neighborhood, let's say. I thought it was ironic yesterday when there were people saying, Well, you know, we went from looking like we were going to have a really good crop to a really average crop. 176 is what these people were saying, and that's an average crop? You know, I mean, come on, folks. And so I think that, you know, you have to be careful when you listen to the comments that come out of some people, because they don't necessarily, they're not necessarily thinking about risk management or any of that sort. But I do think that we certainly are not going to have the crop we thought we were going to have. The weather's definitely had an impact on that. And yet I've been around long enough to know that so many times it's not nearly as dire as we make it out to be either.
Anything from South America? You mentioned there would be more from Brazil.
Oh, yes. Good old Brazil. I tell you, they're always busy. Last week, they were considering suspending that 8% tariff on imported grains from countries outside the Mercosul trading bloc, which is us. Okay, so they thought that this was precautionary in case they ran out of grain because they have such heavy exports. It's just unreal. But the minute they came out with that, the commodity groups and the Brazilian Congress just went berserk. And they said lowering the tariffs would lower the prices to the Brazilian farmer. And of course, immediately the governor came back and said, well, I never signed anything. You know, this is, we're just talking about this. So they tabled the issue right now. And we'll see once. But I think it's your first indicator that there is concern there that this might happen. They are importing grains out of Paraguay at this point in time. So the other thing down there is by the end of 2020, Mato Grosso is going to have added four more corn ethanol plants. Remember when they didn't have any? With these four new plants, they're going to have 18 of them. And that's pretty amazing when you think about it. But that also helps from the standpoint of as they increase their acreage, they have to find ways to be able to locally use things. It's just transportation down there is a nightmare. Argentina, there's not economic-wise, it's the same old, same old. They are assessing the wheat crop damage because they did have frost. And they do know that the northern part got hit pretty hard, but nobody has the actual numbers at this point in time. Now, you mentioned China earlier. I thought the wire story that came out about the food security jitters in China, you know, their inflation's the highest levels in decades in China. So they're really under pressure. There's no question about that. And it looks like they could be heading for their first real corn shortfall in the years of 2021 of about 30 million metric tons. Now, a lot of people said, well, why isn't the corn market going wild? Well, it's mostly because they've already bought, they believe, everything except 3.5 million metric tons from the U.S., which should be 140 million more bushels. So, you know, we really don't know what the corn stocks are in China. We'll never know. I mean, it's too big a country. And I mean, just from visiting Brazil, you get a feel for what it has to be like to be in such a large country with poor communication. It's difficult. But, you know, on the positive side, both their hog and their poultry industries are growing in numbers. You know, and hogs convert 8 pounds of feed to a pound of meat. Poultry converts 2.5 pounds of feed to a pound of meat. That still says to me that, you know, they definitely need to have grain. So it's just unfortunate that this wire story comes out after they've already bought a lot. And so we keep on looking on, you know, looking for things to hang on to. I'm gonna say it again this week. I know I probably sound like a broken record, but please don't hang all of your hopes on China, because that's what's been supporting us is China sales. You know, we've had beans up since August 10th, close to a dollar, and corn up close to 40 cents. So if you haven't rewarded this number, you need to. There's no question about it. Don't ever think that this is just going to continue to go through the roof.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That, of course, is Jackie Vakes. She is with Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. On this Wednesday, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hey, good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, a beautiful day here in Kansas City. We've got just deep, dark blue sky. The humidity's down. It's a wonderful relief, let me tell you.
Well, I'm hoping that that'll come our way, though I believe it might come with some cooler temperatures. It is September, so maybe we should talk about frost, though I'm not sure that's really something that's that big a deal yet.
Yeah, it's hard to believe it's September already, but indeed it is. And boy, just like snapping your fingers, suddenly the weather is changing in Canada, and it won't be long. In fact, just next week before we'll start seeing a risk of frost in the northern plains and the upper Midwest, maybe. In Canada, we'll start off with a little frost in Alberta. This is going to occur on Sunday morning. On Monday morning, we'll shift that frosty environment to northeastern Saskatchewan and northern Manitoba. And it's not a big deal in either of those areas quite yet. But as we go into Tuesday morning, we're going to send a high pressure center down over Montana. And it is going to bring some of that cool air down into the states. And we'll look for some frosty conditions to occur Tuesday morning from Montana into Saskatchewan and Manitoba, as well as western North Dakota. And I think we're going to have a little cloud cover and some wind blowing through eastern North Dakota, so that should keep the temperatures up there. But we will see some frost, and it wouldn't surprise me to see a couple of extreme lows getting down to 29 or 30 degrees in Montana and western North Dakota. And as we go into Wednesday of next week, this high pressure system keeps on going southward, and it's going to be over western Nebraska on Wednesday morning. And we're going to see some frost in western and central Nebraska and northeast Colorado. We may also see some frost and a few light freezes in the eastern parts of the Dakotas and northwestern Minnesota. These areas will probably, again, get down to, certainly down to 30 degrees. I think we will have a couple of colder locations that might get to 29, but I don't think we'll get much colder than that. A little farther to the east, again, the wind's going to blow a little too much, so Iowa and southern portions of Minnesota probably will stay in the middle and upper 30s to lower 40s and not have a risk of any frost on that morning. The coolness will moderate quite a bit as we go into Thursday of next week, and it will go ahead and move deeper into the Midwest, and we'll keep an eye on that, but it's too far out right now to really be able to say too much at that point.
Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, rainfall anytime in the near future. Again, there was a little bit yesterday in my part of the world, but, and I think in some other places more, but sure could use some additional rainfall.
Yeah, and this cold surge that's coming in will set the stage for a deepening low pressure system in the central parts of the Midwest and help to drag a little bit of moisture through the region. That low pressure system will there'll be a weaker system that'll precede it. That'll occur early or late in the weekend, I guess, across the upper Midwest and the Great Lakes region. But as we go into Monday and Tuesday of next week, we'll set the stage for a new low pressure center to form somewhere over northern Missouri and possibly neighboring areas of Illinois and Iowa. And that should help to start to stimulate a little moisture, and we should get some rain to fall in all of that region and everybody to the east and south as we go from Tuesday into early Wednesday morning, just ahead of that colder air. Now, I think the cold may be a little overdone. It's certainly in the pure model data, it's overdone. What I told you was pretty much my expectation, but the models are just kind of going a little crazy with some of the rainfall today because the models are a little colder with the air mass. So they're suggesting some 1/2 to 1.5 inch rains with local 2 to 4 inch amounts in northern Illinois into southwestern Michigan. But I'd be real cautious of that. I don't think we're going to see that much rain, but we'll still get further relief that you were looking for.
Turn your attention to other parts of the world. Two typhoons near where? Korea? The peninsula there?
That's right. Yeah, big storms, too. These aren't weak little things. It was a Category 4 yesterday approaching South Korea. That storm is moving inland right now, and it is quickly weakening. I think it was a Category 2 a couple of hours ago. It'll be a Category 2, or maybe 1.5, let's say, when it finally reaches the South Korea coast. It will go straight northward through both South and North Korea and up into China eventually. And this storm is going to be followed by a second typhoon that will come into the very same areas during the early part of next week. So by this time next week, Wednesday, we are probably going to be looking at rain totals of 5 to 15 inches in South Korea and parts of North Korea, and anywhere from 6 to 12 inches across some of the areas in China. Now, you've got to, what you really need to know here is that the ground's already too wet in China and North Korea. Both areas have saturated soil all the way down deep into the ground. So all this rain is going to be runoff, and that means farmland is going to be flooded for a little while, and it is harvest time for soybeans and corn up in some of these areas. So this is kind of a big deal. And South Korea is only slightly drier, and with this first storm going through there now, they will be too wet after this. Now, I know that we don't care too much about the some of that cropland there in the Korean Peninsula, at least from a big market perspective, but they do have a lot of rice that they produce in both North and South Korea, and both those crops are going to be vulnerable to more losses. They've already had some loss because of flooding earlier this summer.
And is the Chinese rainfall in the northeastern in the corn-growing regions or in the regions that have already been really, really wet and flooded earlier in the year?
Yeah, actually, no. This is prime corn and soybean country. About half of the crop comes from this area that's going to be impacted. They've been struggling with too much moisture here for the past few weeks. Nothing like the rest of China with all that serious flooding we talked about, but it's been progressively getting wetter. And now we're going to add all this extra moisture in there at harvest time. You know, it's not a very good picture, and there will be new flooding up that way. Now, it's not going to be as damaging as the floods that we had in other parts of China earlier in the year, but it's still going to be an issue for some of their corn and soybeans.
Yeah, and just a quick assessment of that crop. I believe that it's actually in or was in pretty good condition, right?
Yes, very good shape, actually, prior to mid-August. And then we had a little bit of an issue. The corn crop should be fairly good. There shouldn't be any issues with that. But the soybeans have been hit with a lot of rain in the last few weeks. So like the U.S., but for different reasons, there's probably a bit of a decline in crop conditions underway.
Move into the southern hemisphere from there. Australia, any problems to date?
You know, Australia, they produce wheat, barley, and canola during this time of the year, and they're coming out of the winter and going into spring. And usually the first couple of weeks in September is when the winter wheat and barley in Queensland usually starts to reproduce. Now, Queensland is not the biggest contributor to their winter crops by any means. It's actually a pretty minor production area. About 6 or 7% of the crop maybe comes from there. But Queensland normally reproduces now, and last week they were experiencing frost and freezes, which probably damaged the crop a little bit, and it's still not raining in Queensland. It's been very dry for a long period of time, and it doesn't look like it's going to rain through the first half of September. So that part of their crop is now in trouble. There's some other areas in Australia that are also drying out. Northern parts of Western Australia, a much more important production area, getting a little too dry. They are not critically dry, and they could still benefit tremendously by some timely rain a little bit later this month. So not a big deal there. And then South Australia is another small wheat and barley and canola producing area. Not all that important either, but it too is very dry away from the coast. So Australia is probably a place we probably want to keep a close eye on as we go forward through these next few weeks, just to make sure they don't stay dry.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.